What's up, Wisconsin? This is Raised in Wisco. I'm your host, Joel Clayfish. Alongside of me with her boogie shoes on, the effervescent Danielle Fairman. You did. You came right in the studio and kicked your boots off.
I did. I have my comfy, what are these? Gahoo socks on. These are my favorite socks.
What is Gahoo? What the heck are Gahoos?
These are Farm and Barn sales.
Okay, like wool socks.
Yeah, they're very comfortable.
Yeah. You know what? It is it's that time in Wisconsin where I finally admit no more warm weather and we have to dress for the cold. That yes. is for sure what is happening. How are you doing? What's going on?
I played out in the extreme weather today. It was sleeting and high winds, you know, the glorious Wisconsin weather. And at the end of the day, it was nice and lovely outside. So
yeah, it was kind of a cruddy day, that's for sure. I contemplated hunting today and just thought better of it.
Yes.
I got stuff done at home instead and work.
That's good.
And as always, lucky for us, the also effervescent, but ever friendly, not always, but most of the time.
Not usually.
Chef Ellie Lawton is here, who brings us her fantastic recipes from week to week. How's it going, Ellie?
It's going.
Yeah?
I hate this weather.
Yeah. Sitting, if you're not watching on Facebook, she's sitting in the studio with a full coat zipped to the top.
If it's under 60, I'm cold and crabby.
Yeah. Oh, wonderful.
Talk to me in spring.
What's your temperature zone? What is it?
I'm a 75 kind of gal.
You're 75. 75 to 75 and a half?
Or some may say I'm 75 years old and I don't care.
No, that's all right. I'm kind of I'm like a 55 to 70. That's my key demographic for temperature.
Yeah, say no 75 doubt. Is my max, but...
Yeah.
Oh, Danielle, you run hot. So
I
we
do.
Yeah. I would think like 45 degrees is your max.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know how Danielle is a living Mr. Buddy heater.
Oh, yes.
There's no
Danielle's a walking crock pot.
If she is in the room is about 5 degrees hotter. If it's a small room, Danielle will literally heat up the room.
Yeah. No, it has gotten warmer in here since you arrived.
My hands are sweating right now.
Yeah, mine are frozen.
Come here.
And this is like the Three Bears, and I'm just right. I'm going to tell you that. Aww. Hey, we love you joining us on Raised in Wisco. The station, civic media stations throughout Wisconsin are carrying the show, all 25 of them. And now we are in Michigan and Minnesota, which is great. And we can still have our rivalries with the Green Bay Packers and still be all right welcoming our friends.
Yes.
Because, you know, once you get outside the Midwest, I think most people think they mix up Michigan, Minnesota, and Wisconsin all the time.
Yeah, I think we're all just kind of a blurred blob.
I feel like Wisconsin definitely stands out because we're cheese, beer, and hunting. That's why I always hear, living in Florida, Michigan, Arkansas, and Maine, I feel like everybody knows Wisconsin for those three things.
Yeah,
yeah,
I think
that's
true. Probably true.
Yeah. But then there's the others.
I think
we still love you guys.
Because of those silly Fomation cheeseheads we wear at Packers, the country literally knows us for cheese.
That's very heads. True.
But that's okay because we really do have the best cheese in the country.
We do.
No doubt about it. Maybe even the world. I don't know. Maybe.
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 Guys, I'm pretty excited because not only do we have a really good friend of mine, Nick Scafidi, and I have been friends for 20 years now, just about, if you can believe that. Is that about right, Nick?
No.
No? You don't think it's been 20 years?
Probably close.
Yeah, I bet it would be. I think we met when you were about 16 or 17 years old.
16? I was going to say like 6.
So was I. No,
it's like, what? No, it's, you guys started hunting when Nick was a toddler?
I think it's 13 years, Joel.
Okay, well, yeah. I'll take 13.
Time flies.
I mean, I rounded up
close.
By 10. What do you want?
Yeah. It's still a long time, though.
Nick Scafidi is not only an expert goose caller, he is one of the best goose callers I've ever heard, and we're going to have him take us to a break or come back from a break with some of his goose calling just for fun.
Oh, good.
Jacob in the studio. Sorry about that, buddy, because I know that wreaks havoc on the mics, but Nick is really one of the best goose and duck callers ever. He is a worldwide hunter as well. Just got back not long ago from South Africa on a fantastic hunt there.
Cool.
Yep. And he and I and he and his lovely young lady, I don't know if they're in the category of Megan and Dave. I don't know if I can call them lovers yet.
And shout out to our lovers.
Shout out to our lovers, Megan and Dave.
We know that they are currently off on a date eating burgers.
Aww. Yes.
They are on a lover's burger date.
They are. Hopefully there will be no lovers' quarrels over the lovers' burgers. But they're taking the week off, and Nick Scafidi is here, and we're going to talk to him, among other things, about covering drones, use of drones in deer recovery, which is a really hot topic, and I'm sure it's going to get hotter because now there are some people who support it. There are some people who are opposed to it. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of laws governing it, and even legislatures in states are trying to decide how laws should affect the use of drones in hunting and recovery. And I think it's a fascinating topic, and I'm glad Nick is here, but I just wanted to make it clear that's not the only thing Nick can talk about. He is actually an incredibly seasoned hunter and a fantastic goose and duck caller as well. But it is time for our weekly.
Oh, you have the evil fingers going on.
Oh, yeah.
I do. I've got the swift.
Crazy.
Ooh. Danielle, do you have a weekly Wisco this week?
I have two.
And that doesn't have to do
Danielle
with a flat tire, a broken windshield, nearly drowning.
Huh? Did you say something?
Is it a broken window?
Window. Yeah. No. At work. Somebody broke into my truck.
Oh, my God. Gosh.
On the job, on the job site. Long story. Previous episode. But I have two.
You'll have to go back and listen to the podcast.
I'm behind.
That was on a bad streak. Yeah. Danielle had some really tough weekly Wisco.
I did. This one is kind of, one story is kind of rough, but it was a fun story. And then the other one is actually for Ellie.
Yay.
Really?
It's got to be about food.
It is about food.
Yes.
Well, bring them on.
So my first one is, my best friend Annie, she allows me to take her on one outdoor adventure a year.
Allows you?
Hey, Annie,
yes.
Come on.
Annie.
Now.
To be honest,
she
Annie
do more
should
than
be
one.
Grateful. Annie, do she better.
Is.
You should be grateful. You should
shout out to Annie,
Danielle,
but do better.
Shout out to Danielle for taking Annie on an outdoor adventure.
She is my absolute best friend, but she loves hunting, she loves food, all that kind of stuff, but she doesn't want to do it. She is waking up early is terrifying. I don't want her to sit in the tree stand with me when she's up early. She's scary.
Hunt in the afternoon.
Sometimes I do, but it's not what she does.
Okay.
But she is being a good best friend and enjoying what I do. So it's great. So it's Saturday.
Once a year.
Last year it was salmon fishing. She had a great time.
Wonderful.
This year I took her out on the duck boat because I wanted to get her on the duck boat, show her all the things. And I had a Mr. Buddy heater in there, minus me. And but it was Saturday. It was gorgeous. It was perfect day out.
Ooh,
took her out
beautiful.
To the river and I fed her. She saw all the sunrises and all the ducks fly in. It was fantastic.
Beautiful.
And she had a great time. And then I ran out of snacks. And then, you know.
And then things started to unravel.
Yeah, and then about 10:30, I'm like, we should go home. And then, so I scooted us with, so on my duck boat, on the John boat, I have the push poles where they extend out and the bottom feet come out. And I just scooted us in there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't wrap the thing around my arm and it fell in the water.
Oh,
the push pole.
No,
the push pole
Danielle.
Fell in the water and I had to get it out and I could not find it. And it was, I'm like, whatever. This is why I think I know where it is. And I had to put out the decoys, had to do everything. So I'm trying to do this and still look for the pole at the same time. So I'm thinking I'm pushing it in farther and farther and farther. And I'm like, I can't find it. Mm-hmm. We're screwed. I had to find a stick.
Wait a minute. Do you not have a motor on this boat?
I do have a motor. So I bought the boat before the motor. Oh, well, circle back. It came with a motor. But it's a 50 horsepower Mercury, but it's not like a mud motor.
Sure.
So where we were going, it was shallow. So it was muck and everything. Mm-hmm. So I just tilted the transom saver up and just
pushed yourselves in.
Yeah, well, I was singing a song,
all
you know,
right.
Like they do.
Sure.
In
Were you singing in the shallow and the shallow?
Yeah, no, but this I
that would have been an appropriate song.
But then, I dropped it, and then whatever. At the end of the day, I actually got in there with my hands and found it.
Well, okay. Good, you found
well,
it.
A,
but
so
that's
an
good.
Odd weekly Wisco,
isn't
but
it?
Sure, I mean
that went a lot of different directions in a short amount
of
time.
It was an experience. I showed Annie the whole entire experience, the good, bad, and the ugly.
So will Annie go again next year?
Next year, yeah, she definitely will.
Once a year.
But my other one is Josh's dad actually shot a deer and he gave us a backstrap.
Ooh.
And I attempted Beef Wellington.
Wow.
I did.
That's awesome. A little bit ambitious for one of your first forays.
It's been stuck in my head ever since you said it four weeks ago. Like
good,
stuck
Danielle.
In my head. So
tell us about how it turned out.
It wasn't crispy.
Okay.
It was kind of doughy.
Okay. You need to bake it
longer. On the inside or the outside?
On the inside.
Yeah. It mm-hmm. is kind of doughy on the inside.
Was it supposed to be?
No, I don't know. I'll leave that to the chef. No. The chef's
well,
like,
it was, I peeled it off and just, we ate what we could.
It should be like a pie crust where it's not doughy, but crispy on the inside, but crispy on the outside.
It was crispy on the outside, but like the bottom part and underneath was kind of still doughy. So I don't know where I went wrong with that.
Interesting. But
well,
I
you
did
try it.
It
again. And
you tried it. That's all that matters,
it
Danielle.
Taste?
It tasted really good.
See?
That's
it
awesome.
Did.
See?
So everybody
your box, Danielle.
Yeah. Danielle, those culinary corners.
Those
just
culinary
breezing
corners.
By.
Yeah, so a lot of that. That's my weekly Wiscos.
I like it,
that's
Chef.
Wonderful.
And I took up the whole first segment.
Oh,
sorry,
no,
everybody.
You're good, man.
Time
to go into segment
that
two.
That was great.
Sometimes I forget altogether. Chef Lawton, what's your weekly Wisco?
Well, I only have one, I think. It was so beautiful that Megan Saladbar and I tacked up the horses and went for a little fall horseback ride.
Ooh,
it was wonderful.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That does sound
had a
very
great
good.
Time. It had been a while.
It
was due.
Horse riding is about as good as it gets in the fall in Wisconsin, I imagine. I had, I sat and froze my ass off in a tree stand. That's what I did for Weekly Wisco.
Did you see anything?
I did not see anything. So
squirrel, bird, anything?
You saw frostbite set in.
You know what? I went out there and I had my gloves. I had my heated hand warmers.
Yep.
I had my heated vest and everything. And I thought, I'm going to wait until I have to turn it on. Well, I was sitting there for about 30 minutes and I turned it all on. And then it ran out. And then I just sat there and froze my ass off.
But bummer.
You know what? You cannot have a successful hunt unless you know what it's like to sit out in, you know, rough, tough conditions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I will say I failed a little bit in my number one rule, which is always be comfortable, because when you're cold out there, it's just not fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I just didn't wear enough layers. I underestimated how 30 degrees would actually feel.
Yeah.
I'm excited because this show, we're going to talk about deer recovery. We're going to talk about Nick's 180-inch Boone and Crockett buck he shot just a couple weeks ago. I mean, and the guy's like a cover model, so I don't know. I don't know what's up with his life. This guy's just firing on all cylinders. Nick Scafidi's our guest. This is Raised in Wisco. Raised in Wisco. We're now on 25 stations throughout Wisconsin, Michigan, and Minnesota. If you have got a radio or a computer or a cell phone, you can listen to us live Saturdays at 11 o'clock a.m. And if you miss us, Danielle Fairman, where can you catch this show, which is a must listen?
You can listen to us on Spotify, YouTube, Facebook, and Apple Music.
That's right. Yeah. So There's no excuse.
There is no
excuse. Raised in Wisco.
Not one.
If you're joining us for the first time, welcome. We love our growing audience, and on Raised in Wisco, are excited to say that you don't have to be a hunter. You don't have to be an angler, which is fisher person. You just have to eat food, which is everybody on earth, because we do our cooking segment with acclaimed award-winning culinarian chef Ellie Lawton. So hang on for that, because we got that coming up. And you will learn something, and you know how I know that? I know lots of junk, and I learn something every week. And this week, we've got expert goose caller, now a Boone and Crockett deer hunter, Nick Scafidi, with us. And Nick, you and your girlfriend own a media company.
Yes, sir.
And you are now, you just harvested within the last couple of weeks a Boone and Crockett whitetail, which is some people,
many
serious whitetail hunters hunt their whole lives hoping to get a Boone and Crockett and never do. That is an ultimately rare, very few people hold the Boone and Crockett title of any species. And you are now one of them. Welcome to the club.
Are we going to get the deets on this hunt? Or well, Danielle and I are dying over here.
Well, my apologies. Nick, tell us how it went down.
Well, this is a 3-year chase with this deer. I mean,
makes an even cooler story.
Start from the beginning.
Start from childhood, Nick.
This deer almost made me single.
Fun story.
Oh my goodness.
Unfortunately, you get obsessed with the deer. I got obsessed with the deer. This deer consumed me for 3 years. First year,
and now you're consuming it.
Now the chase is over. But he started off as a 160 typical, which I hunted him very hard that first year that I had him on cameras. And then didn't have many encounters with him on that first year. Second year, he was probably bigger than he was the year I killed him, which is this year. He's probably pushing that mid to upper 180s.
How old do you think he was at
7.5.
Wow.
It was 6.5-year-old last year. Seven and a half year old this year.
Wow. All right. So big mature deer.
Big.
Did you have cameras on him? So you're watching him. You're patterning him. We had expert hunter Paul House on. He was talking to us about that.
So last year, I actually would have killed him, but Jenny and I... Well, Jenny wanted to do Thanksgiving decorations.
Why are you doing air quotes, Nick? I hope you're not listening
Jenny.
Thanksgiving with air quotes.
Here's the thing. It's very hard to shoot a giant deer when you have a relationship. Sometimes it's like, it's not easy.
Especially when it comes to decorations.
Yes, 100%.
We love decorations.
You have to pick and choose what's a priority. it's tough. So I decided that night, Jenny, we'll do some decorations. We'll get some stuff ready for Thanksgiving. And believe it or not, my phone, that's the worst thing with cell cams, right?
You get the notifications.
I hate them. My phone vibrates and I didn't want to look. I just felt like I just didn't want to look. And this deer is literally broadside standing there 15 yards in front of my stand.
Oh,
talk about
wow.
like just ruin the night.
Just like, okay, I'm going to ask the question everybody in the audience is wondering. Were you a jerk to Jenny that night?
I wasn't mean. I was just very like it.
I'm
hard
not,
to explain.
You were mean.
I was upset.
You were
I wasn't mean. I was upset.
Jenny, I'm not mean. I'm not mad. I'm just frustrated.
Oh, my feelings are getting.
I feel like the Thanksgiving decorations got the abuse.
Well, it's just like, of course, I wanted to go out that night, but I was like, I'm gonna be a good boyfriend. I'm gonna do things with Jenny or whatever.
Aww.
But of course, the one night
that's precious.
It's just how it goes. But anyways, so fast forward, that year was just, I had multiple encounters, just never ended up working out. This year.
You put out Thanksgiving decorations during Halloween.
Yeah. Yep. No, we got everything. Yeah, we had it all. We had it all set. It was just set in August. Yeah, everything was,
He's decorated for all the holidays back in August.
Yep.
Yeah. Yes. So I run a pretty busy salmon fishing business I'm pretty busy through the month of September and October, which is also a very good time to deer hunt. I had that deer covered up on me through the month of September, but I was I had obligations to do my fishing stuff, so I was not able to get out in the woods as early as I would have liked to. October rolled around. I went on an elk hunt, got some pictures of them, got back from my elk hunt, and then I decided to really... So granted, Jenny now she's wonderful because I came off
well,
of
Jenny
a
seems
super,
pretty flexible.
Super busy,
yeah.
Super busy fishing,
deer hunting
season, right into an elk trip, got back and got right into the rut of Wisconsin. So it was like, if I don't kill this deer, like I'm probably going to be single because there's no way like this is going to work out. If I don't kill him, because I knew that I was going to have probably have to hunt this deer through the whole season. Anyways, I got back. It was during the rut. I knew that this is probably the window that I had to make it happen. The neighbors and a couple other people knew this deer was alive. So it was kind of like, all right, this is the year.
Time.
This is it. I got to get it done. Hunted all day sits. Had them one day at probably about 120 yards, just not close a deal. It's frustrating, but obviously it's during the rut, so anything can happen. I got back in the stand 3 days later and was sitting there around 9 a.m. I had him locked up with a doe about 300 yards from my stand.
Ooh, I can't believe we got to take a break. Hang on to your hat.
No.
We're going to hear the rest of this story and whether Nick still has a girlfriend. Yeah. This is Mason and Wisco. This is your one-stop shop for everything in the great outdoors of the great state of Wisconsin and how to take it from field to table, how to cook what you kill, catch, or forage throughout the state. And, man, we got a range of topics on this show, everything from taxidermying to in museums to race cars to the deer rut, and we are in the middle of an awesome story.
And relationship therapy.
and relationship counseling for Nick Scafidi, a friend of the show, good friend of mine for 13 years, not 20.
Not 20.
Feels like 20. I don't know if that's good or bad, Nick. But Nick Scafidi, I'm going to bring us up to date if you're just joining us. Nick Scafidi has been chasing a massive Boone and Crockett whitetail, a huge trophy whitetail, like the kind of three lifetimes, literally three lifetimes in Wisconsin. If you hunt, you may get a deer this big in front of you at some point. And we're right up to the point that it's his third year hunting it, and he's got it on cameras. And the previous year, he nearly lost his relationship over it because he stayed home and Thanksgiving decorated instead of hunting. But this year, you were in the stand, and you see the deer when you're sitting there.
Yep. So during the rut, I mean, so he's at this point, a mature deer at 7.5 years old is extremely hard deer to kill. Like everything, you need a lot of luck.
As they say, they don't get big for a reason.
Exactly. This deer is the master of survival. And my strategy was hunt less, hunt the right wind, go in there only when the wind was right. And I said, I had this deer within probably about 240 yards from me in the field with the doe during the rut, so first week in November. And basically once a deer like that's locked up with the doe, there's really not much you can do other than just hope and pray that you get lucky, that either that doe runs to you or something happens. It just is just a lot of luck involved. And
you can't rattle him off or grunt him off at that point.
He's already got that doe, so no. He's with that doe. Every single buck is trying to get in on that doe. He's the dominant buck on that doe. He's going to push all those other immature bucks off of her. So he's basically got her locked down. He's the top dog. So I had realized at that point about 8, 9 a.m. in the morning, I watched him go into some thick cover with this doe. I watched two other small bucks go into this thick cover with where he was.
So you sat from pre-dawn.
Correct.
Okay.
Till about 9 a.m. And I saw him at first light go into this thick cover with this doe. So he was in the field feeding, milling around with this doe, ended up bumping this doe into some thicker cover where he had her locked up. I watched two other immature bucks go into this thicket, which I thought that's where he maybe had her locked down. Those two other small bucks came flying out of there, which typically means that buck is still in there with that doe. He's pushing them off. They're coming in to scent check her. He's getting aggressive and pushing them off. So I had a couple different options. It was basically like this is like a do. It's a high risk, high reward type situation where I decided I had the wind in my favor, and this is a buck of a lifetime. I've been chasing him for 3 years. I know where he's at. I watched him go into the stick cover with this doe. I feel like this is the chance where I need to get down out of my stand.
Whoa.
And do a spot and stalk, not a still hunt, spot and stalk, and go after this deer. And hopefully get within either one, get within range to where I can maybe call him off.
Oh man.
To maybe just be inside their bubble where I can maybe get lucky. So I got down. I had, like I said, I had the wind was probably 10-15 miles an hour.
I can't believe after all this, you took the chance to blow the whole thing.
How long did you sit there and think about that?
Because it was one of those things where, like, either I'm going to bump him and he's going to go to the neighbors and get killed, mm-hmm. or he's going to either go to the neighbors or the doe and still get killed. I felt like this is the year I have to make it happen. I just felt like the aggressive play was the play. And I knew that if I could just, I had the ground was a little bit wet. The wind was in my favor, and I knew that if the wind is in your favor and a mature buck's on a doe, he's going to be the one that's not the smartest.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. She's the smart one. If I can get in there quietly, maybe I could get lucky. Maybe.
Yeah.
And so I got down out of my stand, and I went after it. And like I said, the whole time I was like, this isn't going to work. There's no way this is going to work. This is just
second guessing.
It's kind of like when you stalk a turkey. It hardly ever works.
It's just, yeah. It's just, the chances of this working are a lot lower than it is. But anyway, so I'm still hunting the whole way through. And like I said, I'm walking in there and I'm moving only when it gets windy. So basically it took me about two hours to do this full stalk to get to within range where I felt. Yeah, because it was one step at a time. The wind would die. I basically would have to just kind of just sit there and wait, glass, make sure he's not bedded, make sure he's not moving through there. I'm not quite sure where he is at this point. I continue to push forward. Wind would pick up, I'd move 10 yards, stop, wait, glass, just look around, just sit there for 10 minutes and just, make sure that nothing was moving. And after like a painstaking 2 hours, I got to where I felt like this is probably where he was. And I'm like, still looking around. I'm like, he's got, if he's still here, he's got to be somewhere in this area. Like I would imagine. But the problem was, it was so thick in there that I'm like, even if he isn't here and he gets up, there's no way I'm going to get a shot. There's no way I'm going to be able to get a shot off of the bow. There's just no way. Like, it'd be super, you have to be super lucky.
It was thick.
It was, yeah. Well, he has her in some thick bedding. So anyways, I'm like trying to figure out like where she might be, where he might be. And I caught a glimpse of movement. The doe actually had me pinned at 30 yards. She jumped through a little opening. And I already had my arrow knocked because I was walking the whole way with my arrow knocked. And he stood up, and I knew right away that the movement behind her was going to be probably him. And he stood up, and I got a glimpse of the rack through the thick cover. And, I mean, I immediately went to full draw. I had a window at 30 yards, probably 12 inches. And he stopped just before that opening, and I'm at full draw, and I had his head in his shoulder. I'm like, just one more step. And he took one more step into the opening, and I had – just exposed the back of his shoulder, and I let it fly and just drilled him at 30 yards.
Oh, what an exciting story. Oh, my gosh. I think you had the three of us in that thicket with you.
Yeah, I was there.
I was there. That was an awesome story.
I have a question, though. Did you call Jenny right away?
I did not. I actually called
you. No, what? Oh my gosh.
I'm so sorry, Jenny. Yeah, I'm sorry, Jenny.
Yeah.
I called her second, but I should have probably called her first. Don't tell her that.
Well,
it's a radio show. It's a radio show.
We won't tell her when it airs. How about that?
Oh my gosh.
Jeez, that's terrible. Gosh.
Jenny needs jewelry.
Sorry, Jenny.
How comfy is that couch?
It's pretty comfy.
He sleeps in the woods, Danielle. He doesn't sleep in the house anymore.
You want that buck, go back out
there. Hey, but now the season's over for me, and now all my time gets to go right towards Jenny.
Yes, I know you guys.
Oh my gosh.
You guys work together. You're fairly inseparable. You travel the world together. So I think it's going to all be all right. Yep. Now you're going to fight over where to put that mount in the house. That's for sure.
Yep. Right in the living room.
And I can't wait to see the picture.
I know.
I haven't seen
too.
The pictures yet.
Yeah.
We're going to put them on our Facebook page.
Yep.
Yeah. Megan Salabar will upload them to our Facebook page.
Oh, that was exciting.
So I know. I'm guessing you did not have to use your drone recovery skills for that deer.
No, I did not. Thank God.
He was probably not. Yeah, that would have made you a nervous wreck, wouldn't it?
Yeah. No, luckily it was a clean kill. And
how far did he go?
You actually ran about the arrow stuck in him. I got single lung. I got probably both lungs, but the arrow stayed in him. So he still made it about 250 yards.
Wow. Wow.
But you had a decent blood trail.
Blood was pouring out.
Oh, okay. So it was a good ethical, clean kill. Yeah. As you're following the blood trail, are you wondering, oh my God, is there some way I may not find this deer?
I mean, So the first 75 yards was pretty like, yeah, he's dead for sure. Like it was, you know, picture perfect, blood everywhere, bubbly blood. So I knew I had some lung in there.
Right.
And then at about the 100 yard mark, it kind of started to slow down a little bit. And I knew that because the arrow was sticking in him. Yeah. Still. Like, man, like, I mean, I felt like he should be dead by now. And the blood trail started to dry up a little bit. So I pushed forward a little bit further, and then the blood trail started to pick back up again. I was like, okay. So I kept pushing, and he was, you know, he was dead at the end of that trail. But it was one of those blood trails where you weren't really looking at the ground. You're looking 10 yards ahead of you.
Sure.
Because you could see the trail. You could see the next pile of blood.
That's nice.
You know.
Yeah. Well, God bless you. That congratulations.
Wow. Yes,
that's
congratulations.
A great story. You really worked for that deer, and now you will get to be in this Fair Chase magazine like
ooh.
I am. You'll get to be perfect. A Boone and Crockett record holder for the rest of your life.
Sure.
That's pretty dang exciting. Now,
that's
we're going to actually get to the reason I originally brought Nick here, and that was to talk about drone recovery. You help folks recover deer with your drone.
Yep.
Tell me about that. That's fascinating to me.
Yeah. So for me, I think it's really cool because some people like, okay, especially like a kid or a new hunter, right, getting into bow hunting, they make a shot at a deer and liver, guts, and that deer runs off and they lose the blood trail. The nice thing is they bring a drone operator in and we're able to find that deer, not put pressure in that deer. It's a very non-invasive way to go in there and confirm that the deer is dead and ethically get the deer and recover it and still be able to eat the meat. So it gives that hunter like the reassurance that their deer is, you know, we're going to be able to find their deer no matter what. Like they hit liver, guts, we're still going to find that deer. You know, it's,
you know.
So
go ahead.
With the gun season coming up, in my head, with the deer recovery with a drone is you're hunting out, let's say, on the Kettle Moraine, and there's a hunter every 100 yards.
Yeah.
Do you ever get any pushback from people? Like if let's say hypothetically I shoot my deer, I'm trying to look for this thing, but it is 3 o'clock in the afternoon and people are still going and it's about to be prime time for deer to go to bed. So are you coming out? When do people call you? Do we call you right away when this thing happens? Because in my head, it's public land. People are going to be pissed.
Yeah. So, I mean, legally we're flying at 400 feet AGL, which is, you know, Class G airspace, which is technically, you know, it's whatever. We can legally fly around wherever we want. But we're not really affecting, the deer don't really care about the drones. I mean, they're not fearful.
Well,
of
there are very loud airplanes and helicopters that go by while you're hunting. They don't seem to affect hunts.
But usually what we'll do is, like, if it's like a public land situation, we'll either wait till nighttime because we have spotlights on the drone, so you can wait till after dark. Or
are you running infrared or
all thermal?
Thermal, yep. Okay, yeah,
all thermal.
Do you see blood trails with the thermal as well?
Yes.
Yeah,
oh,
so
that's cool.
You know,
that high up too. That's insane.
Yeah.
Oh, the technology is incredible for these things now, and I think that nobody wants to see an injured deer that's not recovered. Nobody wants, for sure. Nobody wants to see that, but. There are a lot of ethical questions about hunting with them.
Yeah.
To find the deer, mm-hmm. and then you put yourself in the right place. That is illegal. You may not use the assistance of a drone to hunt. Yeah. So when you find a deer that's not dead yet, you're not technically supposed to tell the hunter.
Legally, you
correct?
Cannot tell them where that deer is. No. Correct.
Yeah, right.
So technically, like legally, I'm not supposed to fly until I think or assume that deer is dead. So like a liver shot, gut shot deer, I'm supposed to wait at least, you know, 5 to 6 hours to where I feel like that deer is probably going to be dead by the time I find it.
And then you can tell the hunter correct. At that point.
Yes.
Yes. So in other words, you're not giving them an undue advantage to kill something. You're giving them a specific advantage to find something that has been ethically and properly killed. Oh, it's a fascinating topic. And believe it or not, it makes me hungry, which is really
weird.
Because next, we get to talk about food, the recipe of the week with Chef Lawton. This is Raised in Wisco. Wisco listeners, my name's Joel Clayfish, sitting alongside the able Danielle Fairman, co-host of the show. We've been together for a long time. I'm not going to say years anymore because I just get it wrong. Danielle Fairman.
Say the minutes.
Yes, good one. Seconds.
Good one. Of course, we've got the fame-acclaimed chef, Ellie Lawton, with us, the culinary genius who helps us turn wild game into fantastic meals for the table on a weekly basis. Easy. Because trust me when I tell you, if she's got someone like Danielle Fairman trying things like venison Wellington.
Yeah, Danielle.
It was
so impressive.
Impressive.
Did you take a picture?
She did, no. I haven't been taking pictures of anything lately.
Gosh, Danielle.
The food eats first.
The phone
eats first. God, I screwed that one up.
You're just hungry, that's all.
I am very hungry, yes. We heard, if you didn't hear the show's story, Nick Scafidi, our guest tonight, if you didn't hear his stalking story of his Boone and Crockett all-time deer whitetail of a lifetime, go back and listen to the podcast if you missed it, because it is a great story, and Nick was a great storyteller telling it, and it was really great. So if you missed it, go listen to it. But I'm not wasting a minute more to get to the food, because not only this is like, I don't know what's going on right now, but this is like going into the Piggly Wiggly when you're hungry. That's how
worst
I feel
idea
right
ever.
Now. Worst idea ever. I'm
does that make me the Piggly Wiggly?
Super hungry, and I
that checks out.
It was just it's an odd week. We didn't eat before the show today.
We are on pre-holiday diets.
We are on pre-holiday.
Yes.
I am. I know that for sure.
Poor Nick was like, what did you bring? I'm so sorry. You picked the wrong day.
You picked the wrong day to be a guest on the show, Nick.
Yeah.
Even though I picked that
day.
Yeah,
you picked it. Yeah.
Sorry. Chef Lawton, what do you got for us?
So we are rolling into Thanksgiving.
Ooh,
yes.
Yeah.
Perfect.
And I make this recipe once a year. But I should make it more.
It's like a friend Anna that you talked about. Once
Annie.
A year. Annie.
Yeah, yeah. This would be a great recipe for Annie. She can do it once.
Because you make it once a year.
But honestly, I should make it more than once a year because I actually love it. So I utilize whatever wild meat I make for Thanksgiving, whether it be a venison roast, a wild turkey breast, duck, whatever I have. I reheat that meat in a cast iron skillet. I'm slicing it thin. I'm making a pan gravy. We've talked about that a little bit. Megan will post the recipe for my traditional classic pan gravy. And then the star of the show is I call it my Thanksgiving dumpster waffle.
What?
What? Sounds great. I love waffles.
Dumpster?
It is so good. So I take... Danielle, you're gonna do this and it's gonna work out great. So I cube up some bread, really small cubes, okay? Like French bread, or if you have some good rolls left from Thanksgiving, cube that up. Mm-hmm. Add some celery, some caramelized onions, a couple eggs, some chicken broth. I do some fresh herbs that I always have left over. So rosemary, thyme, some sage, a little salt and pepper. And I mix that all together. Oh, you can also add some Granny Smith apples or cranberries. Whatever. Oh, this is a dumpster waffle. You mix it all together.
Oh,
yeah,
this
Danielle.
Sounds so exciting.
Sounds so easy.
Yes, it's so, so easy. And you put that in your waffle maker. And I will have Megan post the measurements for the recipe. And you just cook that until it becomes a normal waffle. Pop it out. And you're going to put that sliced meat and gravy on top. And then I always like to make a little cranberry chutney and throw that on top too.
What's a chutney?
Like cranberry relishy type of sauce. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Ooh, how do you make a chutney? I want to know now.
So how, we've talked about chutneys before. Did you not have that written down in your book?
Well, get your pen and paper.
Count me happy. This is the first time I'm being called out today. It's perfect.
So I do cranberries, garlic, onions in a pan with a little bit of stock or broth, whatever I have. And I just reduce that down. You can use wine. It's basically like a kind of chunkier, fancy jam.
Yum.
Yeah. So you
sounds
get
kind of a hybrid between like cranberry sauce and jello or jam.
Yeah, kind of. I guess you could say that.
That sounds delightful.
But you can do whatever. I've put fig jam on it before, blueberry preserves, whatever you have. I mean, this is the dumpster waffle dish, so it's pretty fantastic. Yeah, and you know, after you eat your Thanksgiving meal, you're kind of like sick of it, how it is. But when you blend it all together and make it into a waffle, for some reason, it just tastes so good.
I feel like this could be an appetizer too. Make it beforehand.
Yeah, certainly.
Skewer in there.
You could make the dumpster waffle and then do sausage and gravy over it too with your leftovers. Yeah, I have not done that, but that is on my list. But again, I only do this once a year. So if you want dumpster waffles,
I want dumpster waffles.
One time a year, Annie. I'm going to name these the Annie waffles.
You're going to have to make sure Annie listens to this show because I think she's going to have a new attitude.
Yeah.
About the outdoors.
I would like to put Nick on the spot for a second. What did you do? What are you going to do with your venison? With that big old venison?
So basically just the back straps and the rest is just right to ground.
Yeah, ground.
So I actually had just venison chili the other night.
Oh, wonderful.
Oh, I believe it.
I think
so you cooked Jenny dinner.
It was a ChatGPT recipe and it was phenomenal. It was, ChatGPT, how do I make chili, venison chili?
And they gave it right to you.
It's wonderful.
Yes, in today's world with the technology, if you can't find a recipe, you're not looking for
one. I'm wondering why you didn't look at the Raisin Wisco Facebook page for our chili recipe.
I wasn't aware of it.
We learn something new every day.
We should have a chili off. We should have a chili.
We should.
ChatGPT, we just chili won. Versus,
okay. We got first place in our chili cook-off.
Right. Whoa, let's do this.
I'm a past winner of a number one chili as well. And I'm fairly certain Chef Lawton has cooked many first place chilies in her life.
Yeah, you're
probably
a judge. You don't get to play.
What?
No
I'm
way.
Kidding.
Whoa.
No.
I want to eat her chili. I want to eat her chili.
I made chili one time. My favorite one was I made jalapeno vanilla bean ice cream and put it on top of my chili.
What?
Whoa.
What?
Yeah.
That sounds fantastic.
That'll be mine.
I told
Ellie,
you, Raised in
I love you.
No matter what. Love having you along. We'll see you next week on Raised in Wisconsin.